This is the Education Gadfly Show.
I had a good idea today, and I blogged it. And guess what? I don't make $1 billion.
Now, here's your host, Mike Petrilli.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me welcoming my co-host, a woman who wishes she took that job offer from Instagram, Janie Skull.
I am really kicking myself, Mike.
I tell you, you said it was about 18 months ago, wasn't it? And you said, Thomas B. Fordham Institute Research Assistant or Instagram with stock options.
Flimsy little company about pictures. This week.
$1 billion to Facebook.
$1 billion.
So, you know, this has been going on now for a while that people our age are now younger than my age are making not just like hundreds of millions of dollars.
I mean, I wouldn't call it people. I would call it like scattered individuals, you know, in the entire world. But like, yeah, it's insane.
But they're people
insane.
Like you might have gone to college with.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, this is like...
It's like winning the lottery, honestly. I mean, yeah, some person has a good idea and obviously like they own that idea and
right.
They're a smart person. But really, it's like getting the lottery.
I had a good idea today and I blogged it. And guess what? I don't make $1 billion. Clearly, I've gone into the wrong business. I'm thinking about going into the high tech industry.
There's got to be a way that we can make Fordham like into the high tech industry and make $1 billion.
But then it'll just go into our
endowment. Bottle Fordham and bring it onto iPhones.
We're a nonprofit. That's the trick.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, but at least the Education Gadfly Show is doing well. We appreciate you guys out there letting your friends and colleagues know about it.
Where
we are on our way to Instagram. I'm not sure, actually.
Oh.
but you know, they've got 30 million users, and we are just right behind.
Yeah, we're making it.
All right. Hey, lots to cover this week. We are going to play Pardon the Gadfly, Amber's Research Minute. So, Ty, let's get started and play Pardon the Gadfly.
Now that the GOP primary is all but over, will we hear Mitt Romney say more about education? And
yes.
What exactly?
I don't know.
You really think he's going to start talking about it?
Well, look, he hasn't been able to talk about it because he doesn't really want to abolish the Department of Education. But he couldn't tell the right-wing crazies. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. You can't tell the hard-right conservative base that. You know, he's typically been in favor of a fairly moderate, pragmatic course on federal education policy, probably not so different from what we've seen from the Obama administration. Now, I think he will try to find ways to differentiate himself and will complain that some of the waivers or that race to the top went too far in terms of federal authority. I think he'll complain a lot about spending money on the stimulus that doesn't seem to have had an impact and that just kept teachers from getting laid off back in 2009 instead of getting laid off now in 2012.
But I don't know if he's going to do that, because when you think about it, you know, at this point he basically has the conservative base. Like, that's obviously his thing. He doesn't need to worry about those people. So who he needs to worry about are kind of people on the edge. And I worry if he does start talking about, you know, cutting education. It's just that notion of cutting spending in education that people really balk against. It's not a kind of popular topic. It's not something that the average American really understands the nuance of. And I think when you start kind of saying education is terrible, but we need to cut spending on it, like those two things are very difficult to hold in your mind at the same time.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's very true. And so, but then where does he go? I mean, all the policy stuff. I mean, the things he'd usually want to talk about are things that the president's already talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the trick that they have to face ahead of them. And I still think that if they're creating a narrative that Barack Obama has been irresponsible on spending, that he is heading the country into a debt crisis. And I think these are some of the terms that you hear him talking about already, is trying to paint this picture of fiscal irresponsibility that still does play well as an issue, that you might hear education listed along other issues, kind of in a laundry list. Likewise, you know, if they're making the case that there's been federal overreach, that there's been, not enough respect for, the states or for local discretion, you might see education being a part of that. But I agree, it's not an easy one for the Romney campaign. Okay, topic number two.
Fordham recently released a pilot study of state accountability systems that you co-authored, Janie. In what areas are states getting accountability right, and where do they need to improve?
Well, I mean, they're getting some stuff right. I think largely just the expansion of data and the public availability of data now is huge. It was remarkable to me to go onto state education websites, which 5 years ago were just abysmal and were incredibly difficult to navigate and really didn't say much. Now they actually have really great databases that you can go in and dig and find information. So that's been huge. At the same time, they're including more of that into their accountability system. So in the ways that they measure school, you know, it's moved well beyond AYP measures of, you know, are they making progress? Are they not making progress? You know, it includes growth now. It includes, you know, scores on AP tests. It includes graduation rates. It includes all the stuff that, you know, I think is really beneficial. And at the same time, a lot of states are making it really clear what a good school is with, you know, the A to F rankings that like Florida has and Indiana's now adopted. So those are kind of some of the strengths, but definitely some of the weaknesses were just, you know, really poor incentives and sanctions. And that's really what an accountability system is. It, you know, if you outline sanctions that only address schools after like 6 years of just abysmal performance, and then even then and you have loopholes, that's not accountability. So those, I think, are the areas.
So,
where they
so you're saying, right, that the school ratings or the school grades have come a long way, mm-hmm. But the interventions have not.
Yeah, the system that's supposed to undergird those and actually incentivize schools to change their behavior isn't there.
Because you don't believe that sunshine and shame is enough.
No, I don't think that is.
Now, I've got some qualms with the way the ratings go, and I had a blog post this week where I said that instead of just being all data-based, you know, just looking at test scores and other data and crunching the numbers and spitting out a grade, that there should be a human component in here, too, that we should send out inspectors, and they should go see what's actually happening on, and they can have the power to raise or lower a school's grade. Do you like that idea?
No. I think there's, again, that's just another loophole. It's another way for the system to be gamed. It's another way that politics enters it. And even then, I read your I guess it was a blog post. And to me, it almost seemed like you just wanted people to go into the school and then cherry pick data. So it was still data-based. It was still saying, oh, well, we have this diagnostic assessment that we look at and it shows these things. And to me, that's still information. But it's just kind of using it in a way that makes yourself look good. So I just think that's a system that could easily be gained. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to make a statewide accountability structure, it has to include measures that are equal statewide.
Right. And I would just argue that just as we've said, that teachers shouldn't be judged by test scores alone, that other things matter, mm-hmm. and that you want to have people there on the ground being able to use those judgments. Same thing with schools, you know, that.
But then I think you need to find a uniform way to do that across the state.
Well,
so you can have surveys that the same survey you send to everyone. You know, there are ways to do someone going in and making a qualitative
judgment. I think the inspector, you know, you could have some kind of protocol for them that would be, you know, they need to be trained. There need to be some mechanisms to make sure it's consistent, you know, but somehow to guard against the idea that, you know, whatever you are measuring in terms of the data, there's the potential for gaming or for mm-hmm. extreme focus on those things and those things alone. And so, look, I think the issue is real here, that we've got schools that are focusing on just cranking up reading and math scores in grades 3 through 8 and once in high school, and that leaves a lot of stuff behind. And if that's not what we want our education system to become, I think we've got to invest in having a holistic look at school performance. This is for another day, I guess. Okay, topic number 3.
Bobby Jindal got a slew of education reforms passed last week. Is Diane Ravitch right that he's out to destroy public education?
Well, that's what we hear. I mean, that's what his staff tells us. You know, Stafford Palmieri, for longtime listeners, mm-hmm. used to be at Fordham. She was in the middle of this as his education policy advisor.
No, she is the policy director now.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I am corrected.
Of all types of policy.
She is the director of all types of policy. Is mm-hmm. that right? So yep. She's
she was promoted.
Does she know anything about other policies?
I think she's learning.
God bless democracy. I love it. American form of government. No, so this is exciting, right? I mean, school vouchers expanded statewide, reforms on teacher tenure, improvements to the charter school law. I mean, is Louisiana now at the forefront of education reform?
I mean, I think the fact that they did it all together is a big deal. Other states have done it piecemeal. But yeah, I would say the fact that they put together this whole package and managed to get that through, you know, almost in some ways bipartisan support like that, you know, that obviously many Democrats were against, many Republicans before, but there was also a little bit of crosshairs there. And it's just, I think that is a big deal. And, you know, for Diane Ravitch to say he's out to destroy public education, I think he's out to destroy the system that exists right now. Like, I do agree with that, but I think the system that exists right now is fairly broken. So that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Right. So we're trying to rebuild it. I mean, take, for example, teacher tenure. You know, is that out to destroy public education? Is the the ideal of public education absolutely goes hand in hand with teacher tenure, you know? Or don't call it tenure. Call it, you know, due process rights that make it virtually impossible to let anybody go because of how arduous they are. Nah, you know, come on, this is ridiculous.
I mean, I think she's largely thinking about vouchers and the fact that, you know, it is putting putting public money into private schools and in that sense eroding public education, I guess. But if the public education system isn't working, then it's worth destroying. And I'm not like advocating for no public schools. That's not what I'm saying, but it's just something needs to be done.
No, and look, of course, the hope is to energize the public education system by creating these options. And this is, you know, look, it's going to be interesting. We're going to have two very interesting experiments in Indiana and Louisiana with these statewide programs that are now, you know, have people who are eligible who aren't just the poorest of the poor in the toughest urban neighborhoods, but getting into middle class, working class neighborhoods. I think we're going to learn a lot about how this plays out.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't to say this is the answer and it's going to work. We have to see what works. And if it doesn't work, we'll try something else. It's, you know, it's just trying to do something to address this problem.
It could be the answer.
It could be. It might not be.
The answer. All right. Well, that's all the time we got for this week. That was fun, Janie. We should do this more often, even though you're wrong about school inspectors. But this is good. That's a topic I believe we will perhaps get to debate again in the future. That idea is not going away. Okay. Mark my words. Okay. It is now time for everybody's favorite, Amber's Research Minute. Amber, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Mike.
I understand that an Air Force jet crashed into your hometown the other day.
I did crash into my hometown.
I forgot that's where you're from.
Virginia Beach.
Yeah, my mom actually works near there, but all was well, and they fared just fine.
Was she there when the crash happened?
No, she was actually off that day. Yeah.
All right. Good.
So, yeah. But, I mean, it was pretty jarring. You know, it's not every day that you see that multi-million-dollar military vehicle crash into an apartment building.
Yeah. I understand the they dumped a bunch of fuel, which is probably a good thing. And then they parachuted out and landed, you know, some neighborhood. And then people were helping him, like, you know, get him out of his chair. And he said, oh, I'm really sorry. I crashed my plane into your neighborhood.
Shoot.
Oops.
Oops. He was a trainee.
Yes.
Insert student teaching joke here. Okay,
right.
What you got for us this week?
We got a neat little study out this week by Pat Wolf and Tom Stewart. It examines what the school choice shopping behaviors of parents look like in Detroit. So you guys may know Detroit's going to launch roughly 35 new schools over the next several years to try to turn that district around. So a lot of folks want to know, okay, what do these parents want? You know, try to meet this demand. So they did doorstop interviews, that's kind of cool, of over 1,000 households representing roughly 1,700 school-age kids to ascertain how many Detroit parents, particularly obviously low-income folks, how many are shopping already, how and when they shop, barriers to their choosing, and the characteristics they most value in schools. In short, 71% of Detroit families have shopped already for school alternatives. Remaining 29% have not. Roughly 45% of kids are currently attending a school other than their Detroit assigned public school. 22% in charters, 15% in public schools outside of Detroit, and smaller percentages in public magnets and private schools. A couple other little findings. Parents rely on parents and friends, for the most part, when they consider their options. Biggest barriers to shopping, this is kind of sad, parent literacy levels, language barriers, transportation issues, and time. Most parents value strong academic courses, safety, discipline, convenience, and extracurricular activities, particularly the latter at the high school level. Parents typically shop when their kids are transitioning from grade levels, like fifth to eighth grade. And I thought this was neat. They actually, in the focus groups, tried to dig into what the group they called unlikely shoppers, the people who just don't have any interest in this, why they didn't have any interest. And you know, some of it's self-explanatory. Some were already satisfied or with their DPS option. Others had a real strong loyalty to unionized teachers and unionized schools. And others just thought that the convenience trumped everything else. So anyway, it was a neat little study. It kind of gave us a lot more information about the demand side of choice in an urban district.
Do you think when you called this a cute little study in the beginning, do you think that made the authors upset?
I said neat. It's a neat little study because it drills down and, you know, just in a, I mean, they literally looked at like census blocks in Detroit and kind of zeroed in on one targeted area. No offense to Pat.
All right. Well, hey, you know, we are doing a study not unlike this where we are trying to segment the parent
market.
We are. So I'm curious, did they, when they presented the findings, was it just what the average or what most parents wanted? They didn't try to
They did. I just didn't go into that. So they've got like four little groups, but it's mainly on their propensity to shop. So it's like unlikely veteran shopper. You know, and then what's one? Propensity to shop. You know, like there's some desire there. They just haven't done it yet. So yeah, I think it was like four groups. that they kind of segmented based on their responses to certain questions. So
what's interesting to me is that you've got in Detroit here almost as many parents going outside the district as going to charter schools. And so you've got in a place in Michigan, one of the few places where this intra-district choice thing seems to really be happening. I mean, I think it's in Wisconsin also, maybe Minnesota, handful of those Midwestern states where the provisions happen. So I think basically there's either incentives for the suburban districts to take these kids or to they're not allowed to say no. And that becomes a real option, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So that's it. We got no song. We got no quiz. We got no nothing. That's just the end. We just end right there, Joe. Is that
hopefully
what we do?
You like that study.
Okay. I just couldn't get over the idea that there are still people in Detroit. I've been hung up on that the whole time. I mean,
they're still there.
I mean, what were those interviews like, right?
Yeah, going door to door in Detroit.
Door to door. I mean, that was grunt work there, right? Yeah. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. I mean, so, just because I would think that there's probably a lot of people in Detroit that don't like to answer their door necessarily.
Right, right.
I just can't believe there's still 29% of people who are just perfectly happy where they are. I mean, that's just, it's the worst school system in the country. I mean, I wonder how much of that is just not being aware that there are better options or.
Well, it could be that those are parts of the city that,
yeah,
you know,
that's
where
true.
The schools are
that's
better.
True.
I mean, it, you know, so, and particularly you're talking to elementary schools and they're, you know. You can understand that. Look, I mean, you go out into the suburbs and you see the same thing. There's some interesting research being done by Annette Leroux looking at how more affluent parents choose schools. Mm. And, you know, they don't put a ton of thought into it either, you know. And most of them say, hey, we heard that this neighborhood was a good neighborhood and had good schools, and that was enough for me. And I just send my kid to the local public school. Bada boom, bada bing, you know.
Well, I mean, you're in Detroit, so you can kind of see parents have an affiliation for unions and unionized schools and teachers. Yeah. So there's a history of that there that's in the culture. So,
And it'll be interesting to see how much the kind of new Detroit schools will really meet the demands of these parents. I mean, because they have that opportunity. That's why they're doing the study. And to what extent will that actually pan out? That'll be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, they had a big meeting at Skillman and brought some of these school operators together and presented the findings. So it seems like there's an audience there and they're listening.
All right. Well, we are rooting for Detroit to come back, much like New Orleans has. A lot of effort there in reform, and it is needed. That is all the time we've got for this week. Until next week.
I'm Janie Scull.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute's Education Gadfly Show, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.